Good evening. Tonight I will be reading Huckleberry, a fairy tale that first appeared in The Floating Prince and Other Stories, published in 1881 by Frank Stockton. Frank Stockton was an American humorist who also wrote a great deal of children's fairy tales and fables. He is most famous for his story, The Lady or the Tiger. Huckleberry. More than 168 years ago, there lived a curious personage called Old Riddler. His real name was unknown to the people in that part of the country where he dwelt, but this made no difference, for the name given him was probably just as good as his own. Indeed, I'm quite sure that it was better, for it meant something, and very few people have names that mean anything. He was called Old Riddler for two reasons. In the first place, he was an elderly man. Secondly, he was the greatest fellow to ask riddles that you ever heard of. So this name fitted him very well. Old Riddler had some very peculiar characteristics. Among others, he was a gnome. Living underground for the greater part of his time, he had ample opportunities of working out curious and artful riddles, which he used to try on his fellow gnomes. And if they liked them, he would go above ground and propound his conundrums to the country people, who sometimes guessed them, but not often. The fact is that those persons who wished to be on good terms with the old gnome never guessed his riddles. They knew that they would please him better by giving them up. He took such a pleasure in telling the answers to his riddles that no truly kind-hearted person would deprive him of it by trying to solve them. You see, as Old Riddler used to say when talked to on the subject, if I take all the trouble to make up these riddles, it's no more than fair that I should be allowed to give the answers. So the old gnome, who was not much higher than a 2-year-old child, though he had quite a venerable head and face, was very much encouraged by the way people treated him, and when a person happened to be very kind and appreciative, and gave a good deal of attention to one of his conundrums, that person would be pretty sure, before long, to feel glad that he had met Old Riddler. There were thousands of ways in which the gnomes could benefit the country folks, especially those who had little farms or gardens. Sometimes Old Riddler, who was a person of great influence in his tribe, would take a company of gnomes under the garden of someone to whom he wished to do a favor, and they would put their little hands up through the earth and pull down all the weeds, root foremost, so that when the owner went out in the morning, he would find his garden as clear of weeds as the bottom of a dinner plate. Of course, anyone who has habits of this kind must eventually become a general favorite, and this was the case with Old Riddler. One day he made up a splendid riddle, and after he had told it to all the gnomes, he hurried up to propound it to some human person. He was in such haste that he actually forgot his hat, although it was late in the fall, and he wore his cloak. He had not gone far through the fields before he met a young goose girl named Lois. She was a poor girl and was barefooted, and as Old Riddler saw her in her scanty dress, standing on the cold ground watching her geese, he thought to himself, "Now I do hope that girl has wit enough to understand my riddle, for I feel that I would like to get interested in her." So, approaching Lois, he made a bow and politely asked her, "Can you tell me, my good little girl, why a ship full of sailors at the bottom of the sea is like the price of beef?" The goose girl began to scratch her head through the old handkerchief she wore instead of a bonnet and tried to think of the answer. "Because it's low," said she after a minute or two. "Oh, no," said the gnome, "that's not it. You can give it up, you know, if you can't think of the answer." "I know," said Lois. "Because it's sunk." "Not at all," said Old Riddler, a little impatiently. "Now come, my good girl, you'd much better give it up. You'll just hack at the answer until you make it good for nothing." "Well, what is it?" said Lois. "I will tell you," said the gnome. "Now pay attention to the answer." "Because it has gone down." "Don't you see?" asked the old fellow with a gracious smile. "Yes, I see," said the goose girl, scratching her head again. "But my answer was nearly as good as yours." "Oh, dear me," said Old Riddler, "that won't do. It's of no use at all to give an answer that's nearly good enough. It must be exactly right, or it's worthless. I am afraid, young girl, that you don't care much for riddles." "Yes, I do," said the goose girl. "I make them." "Make them?" exclaimed Old Riddler in great surprise. "Yes," replied Lois. "I'm out here all day with these geese, and I haven't anything else to do, so I make riddles. Do you want to hear one of them?" "Yes, I would like it very much indeed," said the gnome. "Well, then, here's one. If the roofs of houses were flat instead of slanting, why would the rain be like a chained dog?" "Give it up," said Old Riddler. "Because it couldn't run off," answered Lois. "Oh, very good, very good," said the gnome. Why, that's nearly as good as some of mine. And now, my young friend, didn't you feel pleased to have me give up that riddle and let you tell me the answer, straight and true, just as you knew it ought to be?
Oh, yes, said the Goose Girl.
Well, then, continued Old Riddler, remember this. What pleases you will often please other people. And never guess another riddle. Lois, although a rough country girl, was touched by the old man's earnestness and his gentle tones. I never will, said she. That's a very well-meaning girl, said Old Riddler to himself as he walked away, although she hasn't much polish. I'll come sometimes and help her with her little conundrums. Old Riddler had a son named Huckleberry. He was a smart, bright young fellow, and resembled his father in many respects. When he went home, the old gnome told his son about Lois, and tried to impress on his mind the same lesson he had taught the young girl. Huckleberry was a very good little chap, but he was quick-witted and rather forward, and often made his father very angry by guessing his riddles, so he needed a good deal of parental counsel. Nearly all that night, Huckleberry thought about what his father had told him, but not at all as Old Riddler intended he should. "What a fine thing it must be," said Huckleberry to himself, "to go out into the world and teach people things. I'm going to try it myself." So the next day, he started off on his mission. The first person he saw was a very small girl playing under a big oak tree. When the small girl saw the young gnome, she was frightened and drew back, standing up as close against the tree as she could get. But up stepped Master Huckleberry with all the airs and graces he could command. "Can you tell me, my little miss," said he, "why an elephant with a glass globe of goldfish tied to his tail is like a monkey with one pink eye and one of a mazarine blue?"
"No," said the small girl. "I don't know. Go away."
"Oh," said Huckleberry, "perhaps that's too hard for you. I know some nice little ones in words of one syllable. Why is a red man with a green hat like a good boy who has a large duck in a small pond?"
"Go away," said the small girl. "I came here to pick flowers. I don't know riddles."
"Perhaps that one was too easy," said Huckleberry kindly. "I have all sorts. Here's one with longer words divided into syllables. I'll say it slowly for you. What is the difference between a magnanimous shipmate and the topmost leaflet on your grandmother's barberry bush?"
"I haven't got any grandmother," said she.
"Oh, well, any grandmother will do," said Huckleberry.
"I can't guess it," said the small girl, who was now beginning to lose her fear of the funny little fellow. "I never guessed any riddles. I'm not old enough."
"Very well, then," said Huckleberry. "I'll tell you what I'll do. Let's sit here under the tree, and I'll tell you one of my father's riddles and give you the answer. His riddles are better than mine, because none of mine have any answers. And I'll put answers to them, for I can never think of any good ones. I met a boy once and told him a lot of my riddles, and he learned them and went about asking people to guess them. And when the people gave them up, he couldn't tell them the answers, because there were none, and that made everybody mad. He told one of the riddles to his grandmother. I think it was the one about the pink-eyed monkey and the wagon load of beans."
"No," said the small girl. "The elephant and the goldfish was the other part of the pink-eyed monkey one."
"Oh, well, it doesn't make any difference," said Huckleberry. "I don't join my riddles together the same way every time. Sometimes I use the goldfish and elephant with the last part of one riddle, and sometimes with another. As there's no answer, it doesn't matter. I begin a good many of my best riddles with the elephant, for it makes a fine opening. But, as I was going to tell you, this boy told one of my riddles to his grandmother, and she liked it very much. But when she found out there was no answer to it, she gave him a good box on the ear, and that boy's never liked me since. But now I'll tell you a story. That is, it's like a story, but it's really a riddle. Father made it, and everybody thinks it's one of his best. There was once a fair lady of renown who was engaged to be married to a prince. And when the wedding day came round, they were to be married in one of the prince's palaces in the mountains, she was so long getting dressed, you see, she dressed in one of her father's palaces down in the valley, that she was afraid she'd be late. So as soon as her veil was pinned on, she ran down to the stables, threw a wolfskin on the back of one of the fieriest of the chargers, and springing on him, she dashed away. She wasn't used to harnessing horses and was in such a hurry that she forgot all about the bridle. And so, as she was dashing away, she found she couldn't steer the animal. And he didn't go anywhere near the prince's palace, but galloped on and on and on, every minute taking her farther and farther away from where she wanted to go.
She couldn't turn the charger, she couldn't stop him, though she tore off pieces of her veil and tried to put them around his nose, but it was no good. So when the wedding party had waited and waited and waited, the prince got angry and married another lady, and nobody knows where the fair lady of renown went to, although there are some people who say that she's a galloping yet and trying to get her veil around the charger's nose. Now, why was it that fair lady of renown never married? The answer, because she had no bridle. See, you can either say B-R-I-D-A-L or B-R-I-D-L-E because they both sound alike. And if she had had either one of them, she would have been married. That's a pretty long riddle, but it's easier than mine because it's all fixed up right with an answer to it and everything. You like it better than mine, don't you? The small girl did not answer, and when Huckleberry looked around, he saw she was asleep. Poor little thing, said Huckleberry softly to himself. I guess I gave her a little too much riddle to begin with. Her mind isn't formed enough yet, but it's pretty hard on me. I wanted to teach somebody something, and here she's gone to sleep. I wish I could find that goose girl. If Father could teach her something, I'm sure I could. So he went walking through the fields, and pretty soon he saw Lois, standing among her geese, who were feeding on the grass. Huckleberry skipped up to her as lively as a cricket. Can you tell me, said he, why an elephant with a glass globe of goldfish tied to his tail is like the Lord High Admiral of the British Isles? Was the globe of goldfish all the elephant owned? Asked the goose girl thoughtfully. Yes, said Huckleberry, but I don't see what that's got to do with it. Then the answer is, said Lois, without noticing his last remark, because all his property is entailed. Well, I declare, cried Huckleberry, opening his eyes as wide as they would go, if you didn't guess it. Why, I didn't know it had an answer. I wish it hadn't had an answer, said the goose girl, suddenly stamping her foot. I wish there'd never been any answer to it in the whole world. It was only yesterday I promised old Riddler I would never guess another riddle, and here I've done it. It's too bad. I don't think it is, cried Huckleberry, waving his little cap around by the tassel. It's all very well for Father not to want people to guess his riddles, because they've got answers and he knows what they are. But I would never have known that any of mine had an answer if you hadn't guessed this one. If you had had a riddle like this one, wouldn't you have been glad to have someone tell you the answer? Yes, I would, said Lois. Well then, my good girl, remember this. If a thing gives you pleasure, it's very likely that it will give somebody else pleasure. So, let somebody else have a chance, and the next time you hear a riddle that you think the owner has no answer for, guess it for him if you can. Goodbye. And away went Master Huckleberry, skipping and singing and snapping his fingers and twirling his cap until he came to a wide crack in the ground, when he rolled himself up like a huckleberry dumpling and went tumbling and bouncing down into the underground home of the gnomes. Get out of the way, he said to the gnomes as he passed, as he proudly strode to his father's apartments. I'm going to make a report. For the first time in my life, I've taught somebody something. When Huckleberry left her, the goose girl stood silently in the midst of her geese. Her brow was overcast. How's anybody to do two things that can't both be done? She exclaimed at last. I'll have nothing more to do with riddles as long as I live.
The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping, rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, tapping at my chamber door, "'only this and nothing more. "'Ah, distinctly I remember it was in the bleak December, "'and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. "'Eagerly I wished the morrow, "'vainly I had sought to borrow "'from my book surcease of sorrow, "'sorrow for the lost Lenore, "'for the rare and radiant maiden "'whom the angels name Lenore.' Nameless here for evermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before. So that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, 'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. Some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. This it is and nothing more. Presently my soul grew stronger, hesitating then no longer. Sir, said I, or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore. But the fact is I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping, tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce was sure I heard you. Here I opened wide the door. Darkness there and nothing more. Deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there, wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, Lenore. This I whispered in an echo, murmured back the word, Lenore. Merely this and nothing more. Back into the chamber turning, all my soul within me burning, soon again I heard a tapping somewhat louder than before. Surely, said I, surely that is something at my window lattice. Let me see then what thereat is, and this mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment, and this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind and nothing more. Open here I flung the shutter, when with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not a minute stopped or stayed he, but, with mien of lord or lady, perched above my chamber door, perched upon a bust of Pallas just above my chamber door, perched and sat and nothing more. Then this ebony bird beguiling my sad fancy into smiling by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore. Though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou, I said, art sure no craven, ghastly, grim, and ancient raven wandering from the nightly shore. Tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Much I marveled this ungainly fowl to hear discourse so plainly, though its answer little meaning, little relevancy bore. For we cannot help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing bird above his chamber door, bird or beast upon the sculptured bust above his chamber door, with such a name as nevermore. But the raven, sitting lonely on the placid bust, spoke only that one word, as if his soul in that one word he did outpour. Nothing further than he uttered, not a feather than he fluttered, till I scarcely more than muttered, other friends have flown before. On the morrow he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before. Then the bird said, nevermore. Startled at the stillness broken by reply so aptly spoken, doubtless, said I, what it utters is its only stock and store, caught from some unhappy master whom unmerciful disaster followed fast and followed faster till his songs one burden bore, till the dirges of his hope that melancholy burden bore, of never, nevermore. But the raven still beguiling my sad fancy into smiling, straight I wheeled a cushioned seat in front of bird and bust and door. Then upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to linking fancy onto fancy, thinking what this ominous bird of yore, what this grim, ungainly, ghastly, gaunt, and ominous bird of yore meant in croaking nevermore. This I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing to the fowl whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, with my head at ease reclining on the cushion's velvet lining that the lamplight gloated o'er, but whose velvet violet lining with the lamplight gloating o'er, she shall press, ah, nevermore. Then, methought, the air grew denser, perfumed from an unseen censer, swung by seraphim whose footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. Wretch, I cried, thy guard God hath lent thee, by these angels he hath sent thee, respite, respite, and nepenthe from thy memories of Lenore. Quaff, O quaff, this kind nepenthe, and forget this lost Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, whether tempter sent or whether tempest tossed thee here ashore. Desolate, yet all undaunted, on this desert land enchanted, on this home by horror haunted, tell me truly, I implore. Is there balm in Gilead? Tell me, I implore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, by that heaven that bends above us, by that God we both adore, tell this soul with sorrow laden, if within the ancient Aden it shall clasp a sainted maiden whom the angels name Lenore, clasp a rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Be that word our sign in parting, bird or fiend, I shriek upstarting. Get thee back into the tempest in the night's Plutonian shore. Leave no black plume as a token of that lie thy soul hath spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken. Quit the bust above my door. Take thy beak from out my heart and take thy form from off my door. Quoth the raven, nevermore. And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting, on the pallid bust of Pallas just above my chamber door. And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming, and the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor. And my soul from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted nevermore. Annabel Lee, again by Edgar Allan Poe. It was many and many a year ago, in a kingdom by the sea, that a maiden there lived whom you may know by the name of Annabel Lee. And this maiden she lived with no other thought than to love and be loved by me. I was a child and she was a child in this kingdom by the sea. But we loved with a love that was more than love, I and my Annabel Lee, with a love that the winged seraphs of heaven coveted her and me. And this was the reason that, long ago, in this kingdom by the sea, a wind blew out of a cloud, chilling my beautiful Annabel Lee, so that her high-born kinsmen came and bore her away from me, to shut her up in a sepulchre in this kingdom by the sea. The angels, not half so happy in heaven, went envying her and me. Yes, that was the reason, as all men know in this kingdom by the sea, that the wind came out of the cloud by night, chilling and killing my Annabel Lee. But our love, it was stronger by far than the love of those who were older than we, of many far wiser than we, and neither the angels in heaven above nor the demons down under the sea can ever dissever my soul from the soul of the beautiful Annabel Lee. For the moon never beams without bringing me dreams of the beautiful Annabel Lee, and the stars never rise but I feel the bright eyes of the beautiful Annabel Lee. And so all the night tide I lie down by the side of my darling, my life and my bride, in her sepulchre there by the sea, in her tomb by the sounding sea. And finally, Lenore, again by Edgar Allan Poe. Ah, broken is the golden bowl, the spirit flown forever. Let the bell toll, a saintly soul floats on the Stygian river. And Guy de Vere, hast thou no tear, weep now or nevermore. See on yon drear and rigid bier, low lies thy love, Lenore. Come, let the burial rite be read, the funeral song be sung, an anthem for the queenliest dead that ever died so young. A dirge for her, the doubly dead, and that she died so young. Wretches, ye loved her for her wealth and hated her for her pride. And when she fell in feeble health, ye blessed her that she died. How shall the ritual then be read, the requiem how be sung? By you, by yours, the evil eye, by yours, the slanderous tongue, that did to death the innocent that died and died so young. Pecavimus, but rave not thus, and that let a Sabbath song go up to God so solemnly the dead may feel so wrong. The sweet Lenore hath gone before, with hope that flew beside, leaving thee wild for the dear child that should have been thy bride. For her, the fair and debonair, that now so lowly lies, the life upon her yellow hair, but not within her eyes. The life still there upon her hair, the death upon her eyes. Avaunt, tonight my heart is light, no dirge will I upraise, but waft the angel on her flight with the paean of old days. Let no bell toll, lest her sweet soul amid its hallowed mirth should catch the note as it doth float up from the damned earth. To friends above, from fiends below, the indignant ghost is riven, from hell unto a high estate, far up within the heaven, from grief and groan to a golden throne beside the King of Heaven. Thank you for joining us for Reading the Classics, and have a good week and a good Halloween.